and sometimes deadly political intrigue. Out of this emerges a testament to what the few are capable of achieving when they possess skill, stamina, courage, and above all, a belief in the righteousness of their cause. But this is not about supermen. It is about uncomplicated people, imbued with simple but powerful values, which drove them to extraordinary performances. It is about the same breed of fighting men from the same country who battled so valiantly in two world wars to keep the free world free. Much of this tale is about a self-effacing, quietly spoken man by the name of Darrell Watt, and some of those with whom he served. It tells how they, in the face of sometimes impossible adversity, came within an ace of thwarting history by destroying the forces ranged against their country, by killing many and demolishing the platforms that launched them. Sadly, one is left in little doubt that if his peers in the political and military hierarchy had displayed a semblance of the same devotion to duty, the outcome of the conflict would have been radically different. Just where Watt's feats place him in the pantheon of Special Forces soldiers may be grist for the discussion mill, but what is unquestionable is that he demonstrated extraordinary professionalism in the course of a 13-year war, during which he was seldom far from the cauldron. Astonishingly, despite his almost routine heroics, he received precious little recognition, and many of his exploits appear to have gone unrecorded. The reasons for this remain unclear, but the Rhodesian army was certainly not immune to the blight brought by professional jealousy. What is abundantly clear is his achievements are the stuff of legend, and the grandeur of the regiment he so gallantly served is massively enhanced by his contribution. I've used the word terrorist in the book with some reservation when referring to the armed members of Zanla and Zipra. Some would argue a terrorist is simply one who uses violence in order to achieve a political end. That is to oversimplify. Few wars are fought without a political objective, and we invariably accept that the combatants are soldiers, not terrorists. I use the word because their methodology for waging war was, in the main, not synonymous with what one expects from soldiers. I say in the main because all who fought in this war will readily acknowledge that there were men and women within the ranks of the enemy who fought bravely and honorably for a cause they believed in and are deserving of respect. But alas, they were the minority. The facts show very clearly that the overwhelming majority of targets attacked by the armed forces deployed by the anti-Rhodesian movements were of a civilian nature, and only in rare cases were military facilities or personnel the focus of their attention. This conduct has no symmetry with soldiering, and so I feel at liberty to generalize at times and refer to the men who served Robert Mugabe and Joshua Nkomo as terrorists. Efforts by the wartime Rhodesian government to draw the world's attention to the conduct of the men who served Mugabe and Nkomo fell on resolutely deaf ears. The ire of the international community was reserved almost exclusively for those who sought to stem their terrible tide. This was partly because this conflict was erroneously viewed as black versus white, and in Africa, as in much of the world, when such a comparison is made, there can only possibly be one victim and one villain. This dreadful misjudgment resulted in power passing to new rulers in the name of freedom, and a country brimful of promise has been ruined, reducing millions to poverty and misery. It is my fervent hope that those legions of supposedly liberal politicians, pressmen and men and women of the cloth, who did so much to assist in this process, will listen to this book and reflect on their actions. For those genuinely misinformed, one must have some sympathy, but they are